say a pirate's life for me. But pirates of what century? Are there corsairs and sailing ships? Or torrent trading little ships? On P2P or the high seas?
I heard this song last week. It's called The Last Pirate, and it's by independent musician Matthew Ebel.
Don't make Anonymous upset. Thank God I haven't crossed them yet. Are they peg-legged with parrot pets? Or basement rats afraid of sex?
Needless to say, it's very funny lyrics got my attention, so I looked up Matthew at MatthewEbel.com. By all accounts, he seems to be doing everything right according to the new model so many people talk about with regard to the internet and artists. Matthew self-publishes, he self-promotes, and he works at least as hard connecting with his fans as he does on his music. He's critical of the traditional music industry and what he calls the heavy hand of the RIAA, but he doesn't appreciate being taken advantage of either. Matthew was kind enough to agree to talk to me via Skype from his home studio in New Hampshire. Matthew, welcome to The Illusion of More. As you know, I looked you up after hearing The Last Pirate, so before I ask you anything else, tell us about this song.
Yeah, actually, I should ask you, like, what torrent site did you find that one?
Actually, no, my teenage son heard it on Pandora.
Oh, nice.
And he brought it to me. Of course, it was linked on a YouTube page that was not yours, so I didn't share that link on the blog.
Yeah, I actually spent all morning going through, you know, YouTube partner stuff looking for matches, and like I'm absolutely flabbergasted by how many people will just use a song and not even bother crediting like who it came from. A lot of people will at least the name of the artist in there, but it blows my mind how many people will just take a song, put it into a video, play the entire song in high quality just for everyone to use and enjoy and not even bother telling you where the song came from.
Actually, since you went there, I'll come back to the pirate song in a minute, but it's clear from statements on your website that you're not a huge fan of the traditional music industry. But at the same time, it's also clear that you have some pretty strong feelings about protecting your rights as an artist.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I'm a firm believer in if you treat people like children, they're going to act like children. And granted, this is the internet, two things people for some reason tend to act more like children there than they would in real life. And also, there are actual children on the internet. But, you know, one of the things that I say in my terms of service page, I actually have a terms of service page at MatthewEbel.com. And one of the things that I try to stress is, like, you know when you're being a dick. And you know when you're sharing something, you know, so that you can get more exposure for the artist and hopefully get other people to support what they do. But you also know when you're just using a tune and you know, getting it from somewhere else and not paying for it, and you're just being either lazy or selfish about it. You know, most people have at least enough of a conscience to realize that, like, yeah, I'm totally stealing this song. Whether or not they care about it, you know, going back to like Emily White and people like that, whether or not they give a flying fungus that they're not supporting somebody who actually worked to make that song happen is up to them. But deep down, most people actually know, unless they're a complete sociopath, you know. Mm-hmm.
And do you have any way of telling how well this, what I guess I'll call an honor system, is working for you?
Of course it doesn't work. You know, that's the problem. I mean, that's the reason why I can see, you know, groups like the major record labels and their heavy-handed arm, the RIAA, suing, you know, printers at MIT and grandmothers who don't own a computer in the name of protecting copyright. Like, they're just trusting people to be good. Well, you know, if that worked, we wouldn't have police. You know, we wouldn't have an army. Mm. So it doesn't exactly work, but at the very least, one thing that I think the traditional music industry, the big, you know, the big 1980s spawned giant music machine kind of did, and much to the detriment of the entire music industry, they dehumanized music. They made it so you were into a song or an act, and you weren't, or a vibe, and you weren't, there was no connection between your average fan and the songwriter and performer that actually made that music happen. It's a much less human, a much less intimate interaction that's been developed over the years. And I think that's part of why people just feel they can take music and do whatever they want with it. Why they've devalued music, because they don't see people actually working and slaving over this stuff. They see, you know, people like Justin Bieber just sort of being found, putting forth very little effort, walking into a booth that somebody else has paid a lot of money for, singing however he wants to. Somebody hits the auto-tune button and voila, you've got a number one single, and he starts raking in cash. Mm-hmm. You know, like people don't see that there are people out there actually, you know, kind of like Etsy, actually handcrafting this stuff and actually working and sweating and you know, trying to do a living. Right. So I think I wouldn't rely on an honor system on a grand scale, that's for sure, but I am doing as much as I can to at least try and spread awareness that there are actual human beings who need to eat if you want to hear more music come out of them. Mm-hmm. You know?
On the subject of getting that story out, you may have more common ground with the big labels than you think, but I don't want to speculate on that per se. Still, I get what you mean by the Justin Bieber effect, the corporatization of music, if you will. And I agree, that does have a dehumanizing impact on music and people's relationship to it. But at the same time, wouldn't you say that the ability, you mentioned Emily White before, the ability to download thousands of songs, especially without paying for them, only exacerbates the disconnect between listener and musician?
I'll tell you right now, I have an overarching business philosophy in that if somebody likes my music but not enough to pay for it, they're not a fan. I mean, seriously, like they're not a fan, you know? Like there's just this morning I went through, you know, my YouTube content match, you know, hits to see what specifically just for one song. It's a song called Everybody Needs a Ninja.
Right.
And
it's a very funny song, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you. I die at the end of that one, so I don't know. I you know, every like month I'll put myself through this torture just to see how many people are using it for their Modern Warfare 2, you know, Ninja Kill screen cap videos without even bothering to mention my name in the video, in the YouTube notes. You know, some of them at least are you know, saying this is Everybody Needs a Ninja by Matthew Ebel. All right, sure, whatever. You know, it's they're making tons of money off of this, so at least if they're throwing credit back at me, and that's all covered in my terms of service page. Mm-hmm. But it's like every single month, there's this whole new crop of videos popping up that's using this song of mine, and at least half of them don't even bother telling people where the song came from. Like, if you thought this song was awesome enough to put behind your, you know, your video of you teabagging people you just fragged, like, seriously, why is it not awesome enough to say, by the way, you can also find more music from this guy here?
It sounds a lot like you're saying it's not exclusively about money. Obviously, you'd like people to buy your songs, but it sounds as though that you care personally about how your music is used. Other than not being credited, have you come across any use that's made you, I don't know, wince?
I haven't seen anything, you know, for being used for any like political means or anything like that yet. You know, or at least no politics that I would disagree with. As far as wincing goes, like, you know, there's a lot of just like the indie music world, there's a lot of bad videos out there. Mm-hmm. Poorly made videos out there, but you know, nothing that outright makes me wince. I've only ever issued two DMCA takedowns in my entire life. One was to Groove Shark, because they're a bunch of bastards, and another one was for a video. Like, the only time that it really, honest to God, bothers me is when somebody is using my music for something that is clearly designed to generate revenue.
Mm.
And there was a video where they had used Everybody Needs a Ninja, oddly enough, in some video that was being used to raise funds for an independent film project. I'm like, okay, so you didn't ask me if you could use this, and yet you're using it to bring in cash, like directly. It is a direct plea to bring in using this video. And at the time, my name was not even in the comments, let alone credited in the post roll on the video.
And that was a Kickstarter campaign, or rather a crowdfunding of some sort?
Yeah, that was. I think they just had like a PayPal donation. This is pre Kickstarter, actually. I issued a DMCA takedown and eventually got in contact with the person who put the video up, who was like, you know what, I totally spaced on that. He actually works for a production company. Mm-hmm. And should have known this kind of stuff. And he ended up actually licensing the tune from me, and he sent me a bunch of cool swag just because, like, I guess he felt really apologetic. And, you know, he ended up being a really nice guy, but it's just like, you know, people don't, I guess, I don't know what it is that people don't realize that, like, you know, if you're trying to bring in money in some way, shape, or form, and you're using somebody else's stuff, you should probably give them a cut of that money, you know?
Or at the very least ask permission.
Well, yeah, you know, like it was an awesome enough project that I probably would have said, you know what, go for it. If you end up making the film, then slice me off, you know, 10 grand or whatever, you know, whatever a decent licensing fee would be for however big that film project got. I don't think they made it to production at all. But like going on the it's better to ask forgiveness than permission. No, if you need to ask for forgiveness, then you're going to have to ask with money. Right. Honestly, I mean, like, it, to me, it's like, don't be a, I hate to quote Will Wheaton, but don't be a dick, you know?
So let me ask you about the pirate song. Whence comes The Last Pirate?
Well, it's a track off of my latest album called The Lives of Dexter Peterson. And the entire album project was actually based on a novella that I wrote back in 2005. So there's, you know, like a 200 page story that goes along with this album. This particular part finds our hero Dexter as the not the governor, but let's just say the wealthy businessman, the Koch brothers, as it were, of a New World, you know, Caribbean plantation. And his job as the head of the local trading company is to hang pirates, or at least oversee the hanging of the pirates. And the thing is that Dexter is actually from, like, you know, early 2000s New York City. So he's a modern guy who's just sort of thrust into this role. And it's interesting to see how what we used to call piracy, which was effectively gang warfare on the high seas, you know, mm-hmm. nothing really romantic or swashbuckly about it. It was just brutality, you know, unchecked brutality. And yet now we call piracy tweens downloading tunes without paying for it. Like, really? The contrast between the two definitions of the same frickin' word just always amuses me. And so I had to write a song about it, you know.
But what do you feel you're satirizing? Because I suppose people could take it more than one way.
That's kind of intentional. I mean, okay. It's, you know, I am sort of making fun of the RIAA and their heavy-handed approach to meting out justice, especially with the line, "Oh shit, I think we killed the fans." But you know, at the same time, it's not like I don't earn my living through intellectual property. So I have to, just like Jonathan Colton, straddle the line between technology and internet and intellectual property rights, because just like him, without the internet and without, you know, high speed connections and mass access, I wouldn't have a career right now. My career didn't start taking off until the podcasting boom back in 2004. So I owe an awful lot to advances in technology and the ease with which we transmit audio from person to person.
Right. And by all accounts, looking at your site and reading about your career, you seem to have done a very good job of succeeding in the DIY paradigm that so many people talk about with regard to artists and the internet. But without asking how much money you make, how is it working for you?
It's working, but it is definitely a struggle. It is very much it is very difficult in such a high supply and moderate to low demand industry, music, you know, like any art form. You know, unless you're doing, you know, party band cover gigs, then, you know, if you're trying to sell like music that you wrote, it's a very high supply, very low demand kind of environment. Right. So to say that I'm not exactly rolling in cash is kind of an understatement, but it's enough to feed me and clothe me and, you know, keep the lights running and the water shining, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. So give me a sense of how much work it is. I made an assumption before that you're doing a lot yourself. And I think what happens is a lot of non-musicians recognize that you can record and mix with a laptop and that you can distribute for next to nothing using the internet. But then, of course, they don't see all the work, not only of writing and making the music itself, but literally of running the whole operation.
Sitting directly to my left in the studio here is a little coffee table with a sewing machine and a pile of burlap and canvas on it. In my spare time, I am the guy who has to end up sewing the burlap onto the canvas to make the coffee bunker backdrops for my my weekly webcast. So if that isn't like an ideal analogy of what kind of work goes into making this music, I'm doing more than just sitting behind a keyboard banging on it and making sounds. You know, it's like, I do absolutely everything from, work your way down the record label corporate tree here. Accounting, marketing, promotion, more promotion, stinking more promotion, you know, as I've said before. Doing all the visual stuff, costume design, logistics as far as travel, hotel, setting up sound check. I sit at the merch table when I'm at a weekend long convention, sitting behind the table trying to earn a living. I don't have a booth babe doing that for me. I don't have people going around handing out cards for me unless I can recruit some volunteers who are fans. Like every single thing that gets done, I have to initiate it or flat out do it from soup to nuts. And it is a hell of a lot of work just to promote a $10 album, you know, or a $25 shirt.
Well, and I ask this having been a one-man operation in my career. How do you plan to scale if you want to grow your fan base, grow your revenue, presumably?
You've segued for me directly into what is going to sound an awful lot like a sales pitch, but bear with me on this one, okay? In 2008, I set up a site called MatthewEbel.net. My main website is at MatthewEbel.com. That's where you can find out my albums and my tour schedule and all that. MatthewEbel.net is a members-only site. It is, for the first couple of years, I was releasing two new songs every single month. I do and depending on what tier of subscription you get, I have like VIPs and I have what I call my entourage level at the very top, that kind of thing. And depending on what you sign up for, you get certain things like goodies from me in the mail, you know, like an annual VIP goodie bag or postcards. Actually, this Saturday is the annual VIP beer bash right here in my studio in New Hampshire. So I've got people, you know, driving and or flying in from all over the country. Haven't had any international flights for this yet, but, you know, annual shindig. But last year we had people from Washington State, from Florida, you know, from, you know, right next door in Massachusetts, whatever. So the thing is, I have this core group of hardcore fans who get stuff from me every single month. The main thrust of that is the live recordings. Anytime I do a show, I record it and I send out the official bootleg to these subscribers. Mm-hmm. Video if I've got it, and audio if the computer doesn't eat it. The thing about scaling, the more people that sign up for that, I'm doing the same amount of work. If 1,000 people went to MatthewEbel.net right now and grabbed, you know, an all-access pass, I'm doing the same amount of work, whether there's 100 people or whether there's 1,000 people or whether there's 10,000 people.
That's right.
thing that I would need to worry about is, you know, my web server, you know, like how good, how fast my web server is. So I'm not that concerned. I think I've got a business model that can scale, but it's a question of bringing in more fans and convincing them that I put out enough good material consistently that they would want to sign up for something like that. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, it's kind of a gamble, but it's been building for the last 3 or 4 years now. And I'm hoping that it might be a viable model for future DIY musicians.
Matthew, I want to wish you luck as you continue to grow your fan base. I'm glad to have found your music, and you can count me as a fan as well.
Awesome.
So thank you. And thank you for taking the time to talk to me.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Just, you know, let me know when the show goes live, and I'll see if I can put it up on my website and not tell anybody where the show is or who put it out.
Fair enough. Matthew, thank you again. Listeners can go to MatthewEbel.com to hear more or learn more about Matt and his music. Thanks for listening.
Yo ho ho, is there nowhere left to go when the booty calls us anybody?